This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. With Veterans Day next Monday, we're taking a look at how veterans in the La Crosse area are doing through the eyes of two people who work with them on a daily basis. La Crosse County Veterans Service Officer Adam Flood has been on the job 6 weeks. His counterpart in Vernon County, Jim Young, has been helping veterans for 15 years and has served veterans service officers on a national level. La Crosse County UW Extension Director Mary Meehan Strube asked Jim Young about the biggest challenges military veterans face in this area.
I think the biggest challenge is Adam and I trying to get veterans and family members to understand the benefit that that person's entitled to. A lot of people don't have a clue what they're entitled to. I have a sub-office, as I call it, in Hillsboro, which mm-hmm. is 40 miles thereabout from Viroqua. And I go over there twice a month, specifically the whole hour, so people don't have to trudge over here in the wintertime, especially on Highway 82 and maybe get an accident, and especially an elderly person. I was over there the middle of last month, I think it was, and a lady came in, wanted to know if there was any benefit she might could apply for that could help her because her husband was a veteran and he passed away in 2003. And she had his military discharge, his DD Form 214, and his death certificate. And so I said, well, okay, you know, have a seat. We can see if you may qualify for a pension, which is one of the benefits a widow may qualify for. Well, as we sit down and we start talking, she shows me the death certificate, and the veteran passed away of Lou Gehrig's disease in 2003. And I say, well, this puts a new light on what we're doing here. I say, because this condition he passed away of is what's called a presumptive service-connected condition, which means she won't get, let's say, for sake of argument, $400 a month, but somewhere in the neighborhood of $1,150 a month because he passed away of this presumptive service-connected condition. He's a Vietnam veteran, and so the law says if you served in the military with ALS especially, irregardless of time and where you serve, if you passed away of Lou Gehrig's disease, it's a presumptive condition, and that person is entitled to apply for that. But it took her neighbor to prompt her to come see me. She had no idea that that was a benefit available. And so I'm going back to Hillsboro Thursday, and I told her I want to meet the neighbor to thank that person.
Sure.
To get her to come see me.
Now, Adam, would you say that's the same type of challenges that you see facing veterans here in La Crosse as well?
Certainly. A lot of veterans are not aware of what's entitled to them, really. And then from there, you really need to look at the generation. Mm-hmm. Those returning today, their challenge might be trying to get into school where the Vietnam era, they're just starting to get to a point where medical bills are starting to pile up that they're not aware of, that they could be going through the VA. And then certainly with the World War II veterans as well, they, for some reason, did not come in and seek VA assistance when they first got out. So each generation certainly has the need of where they're currently at in life. And I'd say this generation of Iraqi or Afghanistan veterans will be further down the road looking towards medical services where they're currently looking at education. And it's just one thing they need to be aware of is always turn back to the VA, because more than likely there's something out there that they should be knowledgeable about and at that time in their life seek out the need and assistance on it.
Do you see vets from different conflicts having different issues as well?
Today's wars are just being fought at a different level than they have in the past. So some of those returning veterans, unfortunately, post-traumatic stress disorder is one of those primary things. Not saying that the Vietnam era did not have that, but the VA was not as open to actually accepting it. They've definitely turned their view on that. And I would say if somebody tried after Vietnam to get into the VA for that, they should certainly come back for it now, because the VA evolves as they learn more things, the presumptive conditions that Jim was talking about. That's something over time that they learned. Agent Orange was the cause of certain things. And now they won't even think twice. If a veteran comes in and is able to show that they have this medical condition, then certainly the VA will just automatically allot it.
Do the challenges in this area differ from what other veterans in other parts of the United States face?
I don't think so. I go to conferences probably 5 times a year in different places. Mm-hmm. And just a matter of what part of the country you're from is all. Mm-hmm. They're still the same. The same conditions they're being faced here. I'm going to Iowa in December. People out in Cedar Rapids got the same thing that people in Fargo have. It's just a matter, we were in different parts of the country. In some places, getting to their VA care or services is more challenging for some than others. Mm-hmm. One of my colleagues in North Dakota has to travel 200 miles to get his people to a VA hospital. We're fortunate here, very, very fortunate, with the La Crosse CBOC here at the clinic or Toma Medical Center or Madison. On any given day, a person may have to travel no more than 50 miles for that care that the person in North Dakota has to go 200 for. Mm-hmm. But we're very fortunate, but the conditions are still the same.
Healthcare, homelessness, mental health issues, employment, family issues, financial stability, they're all issues that are associated with veterans in this country. Are those the big issues that you see in this area?
You could probably subcategorize some of La Crosse having other things, but for the most part, veterans, like Jim said, here are just the same veterans as elsewhere. They, you know, our pocket of veterans, if you compared it to any place else, just due to the volume, might differ in different ways. You know, I'm sure you go to a Chicago and you'll see greater number of homeless veterans, where here in La Crosse, we do actually really well at assisting those veterans by finding them places with the Salvation Army or out at Toma. They take care of those homeless veterans as well. So as you look at that list that you just described, you could certainly take that elsewhere in the country, and they would tell you those are the major issues that they have with veterans as well, if the veteran is in need.
You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio La Crosse. I'm Mary Meehan Strube. Today I'm talking with Adam Flood and Jim Young, veteran service officers from La Crosse and Vernon counties, about veteran service programs in the Cooley region area. Would you say the same is true, Jim? Adam talked about some of the items that I had listed as issues in the La Crosse area, but would you say that the same is true, healthcare, homelessness?
Yes.
Are the key issues in Vernon County?
The only difference or the only distinction, Adam's workload in those areas may be a little larger than mine. That's all. Mm-hmm. Population is different. That's all. But they're the same.
There's been an emphasis locally in recent years about helping veterans go to college. Is that the case around the country as well?
From what I've seen, yes, it is.
Mm-hmm. And is there still an active interest in our area for veterans to return to college?
From La Crosse's point of view, I mean, we do have 3 universities. I would say, last I checked, we're around 2,000 students who are veterans of some sort. And, you know, I think education probably plays a bigger role here because of that than, say, Viroqua would, because we have that. So We see that population coming to La Crosse.
The United States Automobile Association, which offers insurance to veterans, released a survey that ranks La Crosse as the 3rd best small-sized metro area in the country at employing veterans. So why is that the case, and our veterans that are here finding jobs that they want and are rewarding and that they can sustain or support their families with?
I think that survey, personally, I think you have to take that with a grain of salt. In that, what were the questions asked in that survey, okay, mm-hmm. And what were the respondents' responses to those? is lacrosse number 3? It could very well be, but it could very well be number 20. I do say the institutions in lacrosse, educational institutions in lacrosse, do a wonderful job educating people, and the employers in lacrosse do a wonderful job advertising those things, especially toward the veterans population. But that veteran that's applying for those jobs, a lot of them aren't qualified for some of those things that they're applying for. And so they are getting what's available. One of the other things that I do, I'm on the Western Wisconsin Workforce Development Board and on the Job Center Board Committee specifically. And so we meet every other month talking about these issues. And so one of the hardest areas to fill is in the for welding skill positions. Mm-hmm. They just can't fill them fast enough because the interest isn't there for whatever reason. But in my opinion, that mediocre job that pays minimum wage type of thing, that's a job that's filled on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. So we're the people in this survey, were they looking at these things or were they looking at skill positions? Okay. So I take that survey with a grain of salt.
So do you see the veterans in this area? Are they able to find the kinds of jobs that they want that are rewarding for them and that they can sustain their family with? They're not able to.
They find a job, yes. Mm-hmm. But what they're, quote, looking for and what interest them and would charge them, you know. Mm-hmm. No.
What would it take to have those jobs available?
More of them.
More of them?
Yeah.
And what kinds of jobs are they looking for?
Manufacturing, skilled labor.
Okay.
It's what's out there. And one that's always in great demand are welders, as an example.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
They can't get enough welders. Okay. And in the IT profession, there aren't enough businesses that are hiring IT professionals, okay? And these professionals are running over each other coming out of schools, but the jobs aren't there. And so they're having to, in order to live or survive, take what's available. And unfortunately, in most cases, it's that mediocre minimum wage paying job. Mm-hmm.
Now, Adam, you yourself went back to school, got a bachelor's degree, I believe, mm-hmm. and have had different kinds of employment opportunities since then. Are you seeing the same in this area, that veterans aren't able to find positions that they would like to have?
In some respect. I mean, Jim kind of covered some of the areas. You know, these veterans had a specific job while in the service, and when they got out, you know, they have so much value on that, and they can't always find a job that easily translates to that. They do seek other opportunity. I had to go back and work somewhere else that was not at all what I started off in the military. Well, I should take that back. It did have some correlation, but it's not what I wanted to pursue. And it took me a little bit of time to go through and finally get what I want. And, you know, listening to the fact that lacrosse is number 3, I think lacrosse does a great job at promoting the job opportunities out there. There's a lot of job fairs that look for veterans to hire, give them opportunity just to meet employers. It doesn't always mean that those jobs are being filled by the veterans. You know, it's a great way to show a veteran where they might be able to get to, but there's still that disconnect of sometimes getting a veteran into it.
I'm going to switch to another part of the kinds of services that you've helped veterans to find, and that is health care. And the topic that is in the news the most often recently is the Affordable Care Act. Will it affect veterans? And if it will, how?
To my understanding, really the veterans will not be affected by it. It's not really all that advertised, but on that, in the marketplace, if you're actually covered by the VA healthcare, you are exempt from actually participating in the marketplace. The VA is not an insurance, so they can't be listed on the website. Mm-hmm. However, if the government ever comes to the veteran and says, you know, you are not meeting the standard provided or required, the veteran simply has to turn around and say, I am part of the VA healthcare, therefore I do meet the minimum standard that you are requesting. So at this time, if a veteran does feel that they're scared of not meeting the government regulation, I would just simply tell the veteran, make sure you're enrolled in the VA, and if the government ever comes and questions it, they have all the documentation they need to prove it.
Where do you see technology going to provide better, faster, maybe more efficient, not to say that you aren't efficient now, but more efficient type services for veterans versus that one-on-one contact that you get when people come into your offices or when you go into their homes to help them, you know, find out what services are available to them? Where do you see technology in all of this?
Well, I don't think technology will put Adam and myself out of work.
Okay.
And that no matter what's out there online, there isn't enough space on those sites to do, quote, what we do on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. It just isn't enough. Is there room for technology? Absolutely. Is it beneficial? Most certainly is. But there's always and will always be room for people like myself and Adam out there in the communities. What's unfortunate in along those lines is you always read about a veteran falling through the cracks someplace and not getting services and, oh, how terrible it is, and we have to help this veteran. The VA is not doing its job. Well, if you look and read between the lines, you will see in a lot of cases that veteran is from a state that doesn't have people like Adam or myself. There are 19 states that don't have county service officers. And so those people are relegated to friends, family, neighbors, and television ads to find what they need to get. And unfortunately, they do fall through the cracks. I picked up one today, as a matter of fact, a person from Illinois, out of state, but that's irrelevant to me. The gentleman has prostate cancer and has never filed a claim. Well, you call me Monday morning, we'll do this, you know. But there's always room. It's going to be room for us. I hate to say it, but it's an absolute fact. This is employment for life, if that's what you like, because the need is there. And it's a tremendous need, as we're speaking, for people like myself and Adam coming along. I'm thrilled, believe it or not, that Adam's on board, because myself, that, quote, older generation, we're going to call it quits one day. Not me, but we're going to, at some point in time, retire, if you will. And so there has to be someone there to pick up that sword and continue on. And Adam's is starting there, and I think it's great, personally.
So, Adam, do you see technology replacing the kinds of work that you do?
In the month and a half that I've been on this job, I can't even begin to express how overwhelming it is about understanding how many different things there are to maneuver the VA. I couldn't imagine doing this on my own, and I would not encourage it to any veteran to actually try and pursue this on their own without the right guidance. I have the ability to go online and ask a question to the 72 counties that have a veteran service officer. Actually, I think it's a few less. A few counties aren't represented. They just double dip in a way. That collective mind will tell me how to actually achieve the goal that I'm pursuing. So what I see technology doing is not replacing us, but enhancing what we can do. There'll be better transparency. You know, the VA is moving to where a veteran will be able to get online, and rather than putting a phone call into the regional office in Milwaukee, being able to go online and see where their status actually of the claim is, without really disrupting the actual process. You know, a veteran will be able to potentially get on Facebook and say, I just learned of a new benefit for veterans, and spread that word faster than we've ever been able to spread it before. All of those things will help the veterans to help navigate that vast VA, really, is what Jim and I will do, and God forbid, when Jim retires, that somebody new will step in and just understand how to maneuver the VA at a better pace and help those veterans.
The VA is always improving the way it does business. Mm-hmm. And on a national level, our organization is at the head of the table in that we were very instrumental in the VA extending, if you will, this technology arm to the county level. Because the VA at one time was of the opinion a county service officer isn't serving the veteran the way the service organizations were, okay? And at a couple of meetings in Washington, D.C. at VA headquarters, that was quickly put under the rug and shown just the opposite to be true. And so over the last 7 or 8 years, the VA has used the National Association of County Service Officers as test sites for these new programs, this new technology you're talking about. There's one that's coming on board now. It's called Digit to Digit, D2D. There's another one out there that just came on board called SEP. It was tested not at a VA regional office, not at a clinic, but at a county veteran service office in Ohio, Pennsylvania, and Texas. It's where they were tested before they were rolled out. The VA sees that the county service officer is an integral part of what they do. They've admitted, I use that language, they've admitted the county service officer does 80% of their original claims work for them, but we don't get paid for that. Mm-hmm. We do original work for those guys, 80% worth, and we're very good at it.
Now, Adam, you're located in the La Crosse County Administrative Center. Your office is there. Sure. And I also understand that there's a regional-type veterans office or clinic that's also here in La Crosse out on State Road. How's that different from what you have to offer through the Veterans Service Office?
The State Road facility is not really regional. The only regional facility we have here in Wisconsin is down in Milwaukee. What that is just an outreach clinic from TOMA, where the main hospital is located for our area. And they've found enough of a vet population in the greater La Crosse area to determine to put in a clinic there. So it's just an area where veterans can go for their medical needs. They actually have expanded shortly, or just across a building in a way, a mental health facility as well. So we're even building on from that, and there's talk about relocating those two to a new building somewhere in La Crosse in the next few years and actually combining the medical clinic and the mental health clinic into one area so that the veterans' needs can be met just by walking in through one door.
What other services other than the outreach clinic here in La Crosse are available for veterans?
There's also a vets clinic on Rose Street, and that's much like the mental health clinic, except for that one's not operated primarily by the VA. It's VA associated, but that one is open to the veterans and some of their families as well. They do have different limits on how much a veteran can be seen there, but it's completely off of the VA's paperwork. The VA cannot request any medical documents from them without the written permission by the veteran. So it's a great way for a veteran to go talk about what they need without feeling like the government is able to look in on that. A lot of reserve members actually use that. That way it can't affect their career if they believe that it would, but rarely does the VA actually utilize any medical documentation to make a determination for a reservist as well.
Adam Flood is La Crosse County's Veterans Service Officer. Jim Young is the Veterans Service Officer in Vernon County. They spoke with Mary Meehan Strube, the Director of UW Extension for La Crosse County, about some of the issues facing military veterans in our area. You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. Coming up next, we'll talk about Wisconsin's Main Street program and learn how Viroqua's downtown has benefited from being a longtime member. Archives of this and other recent editions of Newsmakers, extended interviews, and photos can be found on our website at wpr.org/newsmakers. You can also like us on Facebook at WPR Newsmakers. From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, this is Newsmakers. I'm Maureen McCollum. The Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation is hosting a day-long workshop in Onalaska next Thursday about the Main Street program. The state-run program helps communities develop their central business districts and downtowns. While there are more than 30 communities in Wisconsin that are involved in the program, there are less than a handful in southwest Wisconsin. They include Platteville, Prairie du Chien, and Viroqua. Here to talk about Wisconsin's Main Street program and next week's workshop are Jim Engel. He's the Downtown Development Team Manager for the Main Street program, and Emily Roseski. She's Executive Director of Viroqua Partners, which has been a member of the program since 1989. Wisconsin Public Radio's John Davis asked Jim Engel to describe the Main Street program.
Well, Main Street is a downtown development program, and it was all started by the National Trust for Historic Preservation. And we annually have a contract with the National Trust Main Street Center that allows us to offer technical assistance to communities that are in the Main Street program and wanting to revitalize their downtown area.
How does the program work? What are the basics of it?
Every year we have an application process, so communities that are interested file a formal application to the program, and then we have a scoring committee that does the scoring of those apps. And following inclusion into a Main Street program, we typically take about 3 new communities per year, but following inclusion, we then offer a set of services for 5 years and actually beyond that, too. But we give free design assistance. We help Main Street communities with the small business consultations. We bring in a lot of consultants from all over the United States for the life of a Main Street program that helps communities with really specific issues like filling empty buildings or doing great festivals downtown that attract people or restoring their buildings, maybe redeveloping a white elephant building in the downtown. But we really take a look at the needs of each specific community and help them out.
Is there much changeover in the program? There's between 30 and 40 communities involved. Do communities graduate from the program?
I don't know if graduate's the right word. We have some more mature Main Street programs like Viroqua that we still offer technical assistance to, but it's not nearly as intense as the programs that are in the first 5 years. And we also have some communities that go a different direction, maybe after 10, 15 years in the program too. So we've probably worked in 50, 55 communities over the course of time.
Emily, I'm going to bring you in here.
Sure.
If that's okay. For those who haven't been to Viroqua, what is the downtown like?
Downtown's looking really good. We have very few vacancies. We have a lot of new businesses. It's a great community, and the Main Street program has definitely made us a stronger community. But Viroqua is a fantastic little destination in Vernon County.
Viroqua has a long history in the Main Street program. Talk a little bit about that. If you know why the community got involved originally back in 1989, I believe it is.
Yep, 89. We're a very community-driven organization. In 1989, Viroqua Revitalization Association was going strong, and they had looked into the Main Street program when it began here in the state and decided that Viroqua would be a good Main Street community. And so they got on board in 89, and then we had a Chamber of Commerce as well, that in 1995, the Chamber of Commerce in Viroqua and the Viroqua Revitalization Association came together and created Viroqua Chamber Main Street City, also known as Viroqua Partners or Viroqua Chamber Main Street. So we're a Chamber of Commerce and a Main Street organization and have been since the 1995.
What has the program meant for Viroqua?
Viroqua is definitely stronger for it. The way I like to describe it is it's really a community-driven economic development plan. So I think it's just a really great way to get the community involved. We've been going strong in that program, and there's a real sense of place for our downtown, and that's really what we're trying to create. It's based on historic preservation, but it's really creating community center downtown, and that's been really good for us. It's also just given us a really grassroots approach to economic development that a small rural community can use.
Jim, I know the program has been around since the 1980s. Has it changed much in those years?
Well, we try to change based on what the community needs are. And I think problems in our downtowns across the state since 1988 when we started have changed fairly dramatically, too. But we offer a set of services every year, and I think we do a pretty good job of looking at the issues that our downtowns are having at the time and then reacting to those.
How have things changed over time?
I'll give you an example. You know, if you would have asked me 10 years ago what the problems were for our downtown areas, I probably would have talked about the influx of retail and the new existence of big box retailers kind of flooding the market and taking dollars out of the downtown business owners' hands. But, I don't hear that as much anymore. I think downtowns are kind of building themselves up as a trendy place for people to do shopping and living and investing and banking and you name it. So I don't know if that's the chief issue we have to deal with anymore. You know, I think whenever you start a new downtown or any new organization like a downtown revitalization organization, funds are limited. And we're not a financial grant program. We just offer technical assistance. So it's always a tough thing for communities to rally around and raise enough money to pay an executive director and start a new organization.
I know that at one time the Main Street program was in the Department of Commerce, and I think it was in a different department before that. Within the last couple of years, we've seen the development of kind of this quasi-public-private partnership called the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation. Were there any changes in the program as a result of that creation?
Well, we're still sticking to our core services that we've offered for several years. The one change, which is a positive change when we became part of the WEDC, is that we have people in the areas called community account managers, that there were five of them located across the state. So the Main Street program is promoted heavily by those community account managers, and they assist us with a lot of the visits in the communities, too. So we've got some built-in staff throughout the state. And another change, not necessarily with the Main Street program, but we started another program last year called Connect Communities, which was really put together for communities that didn't feel like they were ready yet for the Main Street program or possibly would never do Main Street but needed some extra help in their downtown area. Could it be a small town? It could be an urban district, you name it. So we started to Connect Communities last year and added our first 20 communities to that program. We don't offer as many intense on-site assistance services, but it's a way to get those communities in the loop and provide some resources for them.
Emily, have you noticed any changes in recent years with the program?
The support and technical assistance we've had has been pretty consistent with the changeover. So we have really good staff. Jim and Joe are amazing. So that consistency in having those contacts at the State Department's been really nice.
Jim, what is the benefit of communities to be part of this program?
Well, I think a lot of the communities get involved because they need just a little jump start. And some of the communities that start with the Main Street program really don't have any kind of organization locally that they can activate projects with. So we help them usually start a new nonprofit organization. That's not always the case, but usually a new organization. And then we bring in good people, you know, that offer them assistance to meet their needs. We help them to do work planning. So all of our Main Street communities have a set of projects that they prioritize and are working on for the year. And then one requirement that we also have is we require all of our Main Street communities to be staffed with an executive director. So for smaller communities that are under 5,000, that can be a part-time director. And then communities that are over 5,000 population, it has to be a full-time director. But I really think that's a difference maker. And Emily is talking, and she's the director in Viroqua and has done a great job. So I think that added staff in the Main Street communities is really helpful, too.
Why aren't more communities involved in the program? I mean, Wisconsin has a lot of really neat downtowns, and there are only between 30 and 40 communities involved.
Part of that is our issue because we have budget and staff to operate with the number of communities that we take. So It's a competitive process. The application process is a community can't just sign up and start doing Main Street. They have to sign a letter of agreement that holds them to some criteria, and they've got to have the staff person on board. They've got to have a minimum budget. That kind of thing has to be in place for them to do Main Street. So there is demand for the program, but we try to limit it to about 3 new communities each year.
Emily, do you get a lot of calls from communities who maybe aren't involved in the Main Street program with questions either how to join the program or can you give us some help to develop our downtown?
Yeah, we definitely do. And I would add to Jim, what Jim's saying is that I think a lot of communities just don't know the resources and don't know what this program can offer. I have had a lot of calls from communities that are interested in joining, have found out about it and interested in how it can help them. So that's one of the nice things about all the communities that are involved is that we are a pretty tight group and we really help each other out. And that's just one more benefit to being a Main Street community.
Jim, why is historic preservation such an important part of this Main Street program?
I think the preservation part of it is the community's trump card. You know, all of our communities are different, but the historic buildings that they have in the downtown area really sets them apart from the community next door or the community across the state. We're a program based on authenticity. It was started by the National Trust for Historic Preservation, so we've been actively preaching preservation to our community since we started in 1988. And I think if you take a look at the more successful communities around the state that have done good things in their downtown, nearly all of them have had a preservation component to the program to maintain that character in the downtown area. You know, every shopping mall and every discount store kind of looks alike, but downtowns that have that architecture and flavor kind of really set themselves apart.
Is it necessary to have some sort of historic component to your downtown?
In the application process, there are 7 criteria that applications are scored on, and historic integrity is one of those 7 criteria. So I'm not saying a community couldn't be selected for Main Street if they didn't have great historic fabric in their downtown, but it would be more difficult.
Emily, what type of help has Viroqua received?
The state program has helped quite a bit. Right now we're looking at a new library project. Early on in that process when we were looking at locations for the building, we did have Main Street staff come out and assist with some of that committee work. Joe Lonizak, the state architect, I do not have an architectural degree, so he's a huge resource when a building is looking at doing a rehabilitation or facade change. He will do renderings for us of that building, has helped with some streetscaping, so is really familiar with the historic preservation guidelines and how they apply. And then just having the small business assistance when there's a question that a small business can't answer about growth, financial management, the state staff can help, and the communities also help if they've gone through that before. So it's a real supportive network.
Could Viroqua do this without the state's help?
I think it really creates the groundwork. It's the framework for this economic development approach, and I think that's really the key piece is that there's education involved and there's that educational component, and without that continued education, it would be a struggle.
Jim, I'm curious, what type of community is best suited for the Main Street program?
That's a good question. I think, as you mentioned before, the preservation element, I think it helps to have some historic building stock. I think it helps to have a core group of really enthusiastic business leaders and also broad-based support in the community. Interest in downtown revitalization from people all across the community. I think it helps greatly to have a local city hall that's very much in favor of a downtown revitalization process and has actually made that a priority and possibly even interested in investing funds in a downtown revitalization effort. I think those are kind of key pieces to the puzzle. Also, it doesn't hurt to have kind of a budding business mix in your downtown. It doesn't have to be the outstanding mix that you see in some communities because, quite frankly, some communities get involved in Main Street because they've got too many vacant buildings downtown. But I think something that you have to start with in terms of a business mix in place is a good thing.
I know it's a very expensive thing to do as well, is it not, to maintain a downtown and keep it healthy and vital?
It definitely is. But I think, again, a lot of that is the energy that's created through this program is it's exciting small business owners and entrepreneurs to want to get into business, being a resource there when they are seeing and having really good events encourages our businesses to keep going.
We're talking about the hiring of an executive director, you know, which costs money. You got to have a base budget to actually do some projects. I think as our communities have carried on their process and have got some wins under their belts and actually done some exciting projects, it becomes easier to raise money locally. And our Main Street programs in the state are funded in many different ways. Some of them have business improvement districts in their downtown that help them fund projects. Others raise a lot of money with promotional events. Others do pledge drives. Others get money from local foundations, from city government. So it's just a constant process to keep the budget up there. But our communities have generally done a very good job of it.
Are there a number of communities with healthy downtowns that aren't a part of the program? I'm thinking of the city of La Crosse. But are there other communities around the state with really healthy downtowns who choose to not be part of this?
Oh, certainly. Yeah, there are communities that are doing downtown revitalization on their own. And some of those even implement the Main Street approach to downtown revitalization. The whole program is based on a trademarked approach that the National Trust created called the four-point approach, which consists of organization, promotion, design, and economic restructuring. And all of our Main Street programs have committee structures set up based on that approach. But yeah, there are programs that, communities that have staffing that help them to do good things in their downtown areas. And some of them, even though they're not formally in the Main Street program, have implemented that approach.
I wanted to talk a little bit about job creation. I know back in the 50s, Main Streets were where the jobs were. I don't think they're thought of that way anymore today. But there is some evidence that Wisconsin's Main Street program has done a fairly good job creating new jobs over the years.
I think one of the things that we've always believed in since we started way back in 1988 was measuring the reinvestment that we've had in our downtowns during a community's period in a Main Street program. So Emily, for example, in Viroqua, every month files an online report that shows the new businesses open, jobs created, facade rehabs done, private investment in the district, public investment in the district. So we can collect stats, you know, that show the return on investment of the program. And since we started, there have been 4,500 new businesses open in our downtown areas, and those are net figures, and they've created 17,000 new jobs. So we do think that the Main Street communities are producing more of that than a community that is not actively doing a downtown revitalization program like Main Street.
Emily, what type of job creation is the Viroqua downtown in?
You know, I think it changes quite a bit. I don't have those numbers in front of me, Jim. I don't know if you have the numbers over the course that we've been here since 89, what Viroqua specifically has created. But, you know, they're seen as, they're generally smaller businesses, so they're seen as, you know, turnover one or two people, but we do get some larger ones. But it's really looking at the whole picture of looking at that public investment and what they put into infrastructure, what the building owners are putting in. So it's not just taking even just the snapshot of job creation, but looking at everything else that is lending itself to that cycle.
The economy, I know, has been pretty tough the last few years. How has that affected downtowns in Wisconsin, Jim?
Well, it has. You know, and I actually thought the impact would be bigger than it has been, and I'm not sure what the reason for this is, but it's been kind of inconsistent from community to community. I see some that have really struggled with losing businesses, and then I see others that have just boomed during this difficult time. And I hear stories, for example, Lake Mills, where some new business owners opened their businesses, and they were spouses of people that had lost their jobs, you know, working for companies. So it was kind of an interesting take on that. But there's have been some communities that have done a terrific job. Port Washington, Wisconsin, had a much bigger vacancy rate 5 years ago than it does now. And they had like a dozen new businesses open up in the last year, including a Duluth trading company that went into a kind of an iconic building that had been vacant for about 10 years. So some communities have been able to weather that storm, and some it's been a little bit more difficult.
Emily, how is Viroqua's downtown? You mentioned earlier there's a few empty storefronts in Viroqua. How has Viroqua done the last 5 years?
Viroqua's actually done fantastic. I've been the director for 3 years. I've been with the organization for five. So I've seen it, and we actually had some kind of cornerstone vacancies when I started this position. An old pharmacy, actually two pharmacy buildings that were vacant with a lot of square footage, and then another clothing store. And we filled those. The vacancies that we have now have popped up in the last month. So we were a full downtown for a while. So we actually saw a lot of growth and a lot of positive improvements in our downtown in the last 5 years.
Jim, what makes a downtown a success in Wisconsin?
I think it's got to be diversified. You know, the communities that have a good mix of service businesses, of retail businesses, I think it really helps. I think the restoration of the buildings to make the community look good, and maybe even the reuse of some older buildings that have outlived their former use, communities that have been real good and about fixing those buildings up and finding new uses for them is good. I also think communities that have done a good job of attracting people to their districts by putting on new events that bring visitors and the residents to the downtown have done much better than ones that have just sat back and rested on their laurels with their same old promotions that they have done for years. Those are the things that come to mind immediately.
Emily, I assume you believe Viroqua's downtown is a success story. Why do you think that is?
Viroqua has a really strong sense of entrepreneurial spirit. I think we attract a lot of people to our community, and they're a really engaged community. We have a lot of movement, a lot of progress in our community, and I think that lends itself really well to what we're doing.
Jim, I'm wondering if you could talk a little bit about this workshop in Alaska on November 14th.
Well, we're actually doing four application workshops, and the one on Alaska is on the last day of our statewide road trip. It's going to be at the City Hall Council Chamber at 415 Main Street in Onalaska. It's going to run from 9:30 to 3:30 with a lunch on your own. But the Main Street staff is going to be on hand there. We're going to give attendees a little bit of information about the history of the program. The four-point approach map model I just talked about. We're going to talk about building support in your district and your community for the Main Street program. We're going to talk about different funding options for the Main Street program. And then we're going to go through the complete set of services that the WEDC and the Main Street program offers Main Street communities. And we're going to finish up the day going through the application question by question to tell the attendees kind of what we expect. We'll give some tips. We'll talk about the scoring procedure and finally go over kind of the deadlines and dates that are coming up. The applications are actually due on April 15th, 2014. So communities have some time after they come to the workshop to actually get the application done. But we expect to work with three new Main Street communities starting in July of 2014.
Is there anything else either of you would like to add?
No, I encourage any community that's out there or even residents of communities to, I'm more than willing to answer any calls that people have about what this program can do. I really believe in it. It's a real grassroots, community-driven form of economic development, and I think it's really important to keep our smaller communities strong and to really engage our larger communities like La Crosse.
Anyone interested in the workshops can register online on the WEDC website, or they can call me at 608-210-6840, and I'll help get you registered. Main Streets for All Size Communities. Our smallest community in the state is Tigerton, Wisconsin, which has a population under 800 people. And I guess you could say our largest is Milwaukee, because one of our newest Main Street communities is an urban neighborhood district in Milwaukee.
Jim Engel is the Downtown Development Team Manager for the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation's Main Street Program. Emily Roseski is the Executive Director of Viroqua Partners, which manages Viroqua's downtown. They talked with Wisconsin Public Radio's John Davis about the Main Street Program. The state is looking for three new communities to join the program and is hosting a series of forums around the state, including one next Thursday at Onalaska City Hall. Thanks for listening to Newsmakers. From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, I'm Maureen McCollum. Our production team includes John Gatto, Mary Meehan Strube, and our senior producer, John Davis. To hear archives of this or other recent editions of Newsmakers, visit our website at wpr.org/newsmakers. You'll also find extended interviews and photos, and if you'd like to comment on our program or have a suggestion for future shows, you'll also find links to our producers and staff. That and more at wpr.org/newsmakers. You can also find Newsmakers on Facebook, updates on future shows, links to our archives, and more. Like us on Facebook at WPR Newsmakers.